doubtful. Maybe partly. They have to know a little bit. They have to know a little, at least.
They knew the word breakfast.
What's that?
They knew the word breakfast.
Right. They may know as much as some Americans, you know. So. But it'd be a good experience, I'm sure, if you have the room and the ability. Ron Loughrey was supposed to deliver this lesson, and he apologizes he can't be here. I'm not Ron Loughrey. I saw him yesterday, and it was interesting. I'll tell you a little story about that. His wife was there, and when he got ill, the illness that made them say it's time to go to the hospital, it was right after preaching on Sunday morning over at Lynn Street, and he got home. He just felt awful, and she knew he needed to go to the hospital, called the emergency car, and it came. And as they were putting him on the stretcher, or whatever you call it, to get him ready to go to the hospital, they asked Janie, the guys, the EMT guys, was he doing anything strenuous or active when he got ill? And she said, yes, he was preaching. And the guy said, well, was it a hellfire and brimstone sermon? And she said, yes. And so I was giving him a hard time, saying a lot of times people that have that surgery, their personality will change after. And I said, now you're going to be this calm preacher. And he said, no, it's not me. So, but we're glad he's doing well. I thought I maybe should introduce myself tonight, but I'm afraid of what I might say about myself, so I'm not going to do that. But we are here to study the fifth beatitude tonight. And there is a handout that has a front and back and some blanks to fill in if you want to use that. If you didn't get one, raise your hand. Someone will get them out, but it looks like probably most of you did. So mercy. Mercy, mercy, mercy. I can remember my grandmother. That was one of her expressions. When anything concerned her or got her attention, she would say, mercy. And so, blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Again, the fifth of the Beatitudes that are sort of the introduction to Jesus' great Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5. You know, in one sense, it's very straightforward, isn't it? It's not a long saying. The key word is the word at the center of it, mercy. So let's just take some time and try and discern what it means. What does this word mean? And I imagine we'll have some time when I'm done, and so we may sort of use it as a class. And if you have thoughts or you want to say something you learned about mercy or something you want to mention about mercy that I don't, might maybe be thinking about that as we conclude tonight before we're done. But I just want us to search the Scripture this evening. So if you'd like to wear your Bible out in lessons, I think you'll be pleased for the next few minutes as we search out this word. Let's begin in the context of the book of Matthew itself, where this saying is recorded for us. And we're just going to look at some places where this word is used that might help us in understanding what it's all about. And so a few chapters on from chapter 5, from where Jesus says this beatitude, in chapter 9, let's look and see a place that this word is used, beginning at verse 10. Matthew 9, verse 10, and as Jesus reclined at table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? But when he heard it, he said, Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." It's interesting to me how Jesus speaks to these religious scholars, the Pharisees. They were sort of the religious experts, biblical experts of the time. But notice how Jesus speaks to them as they question him, you know, questioning who he eats with. He sort of lectures them. And he talks to them like you would, I guess, a room full of students who don't know any Bible. He says to them, "Go and learn." Well, that wasn't the kind of thing they're used to hearing. Go and learn. And then he quotes this Old Testament prophet, Hosea. In particular, he quotes Hosea chapter 6, verse 6. If you look back in the Minor Prophets at Hosea, Hosea 6, 6 says this, "I desire," and then it depends on your translation, but God says, "I desire steadfast love," or you could translate it, "mercy," or "goodness," or "kindness." Sort of gives you the gamut of that word. "I desire steadfast love and not sacrifice." It's what God says through Hosea. Now, when they made the Greek Bible, the Greek Old Testament, the word that was used to translate that original Hebrew word was the Greek word for mercy. So God says through Hosea, if you don't have mercy, your worship sacrifices are worthless to me. That's basically what he's saying originally to the audience in Hosea's day. And then you jump forward several centuries and Jesus pulls this quote out of Hosea and he applies it to his critics. Yes, he was eating with tax collectors and sinners because, you see, it's the nature of God to be merciful to sinners. It's the nature of God to be kind, forgiving, loving. And Jesus tries to get that point across to his critics here, Matthew chapter 9. Go three more chapters to the right, Matthew chapter 12. Again, Jesus is under criticism by the religious experts. This time they're trying to attack him in a different way, trying to attack him through his disciples. By criticizing his disciples, they've been traveling. His disciples are hungry, and as they traveled through a wheat field, they've plucked some heads of grain to pop in their mouth as a snack as they travel. It happened to be taking place on the Sabbath day, and so the Pharisees, the experts, so-called, see this as an opportunity to critique Jesus through his disciples and claim that they believe it's a violation of God's law, just picking a few heads of grain to eat and satisfy their hunger. Well, Jesus responds to that criticism, chapter 12 of Matthew, verses 3 through 8. He said to them, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which it was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priests. Or have you not read in the law how on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are guiltless? I tell you, something greater than the temple is here. And if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Now, just in his response there, any of that sound familiar from what we've already read? Jesus again quotes the same verse from the Old Testament, from Hosea. And again, he's talking to the so-called experts, Bible experts, and he says to them, "Have you not read in the Bible?" Now, that would be offensive to them, no doubt, because yes, they had read it in the Bible. In fact, they probably had it memorized. But he questions a sort of a rhetorical device here. Haven't you read your Bible where it says? But again, haven't we learned that just because you've read it, or just because you've memorized it, doesn't mean you understand it or practice it? Okay? And that was Jesus' critique of them. They may have known it in one sense, but they didn't live it. And so he points out their misunderstanding of the Bible on this issue. And he says, again, in conclusion, he says, if you understood Hosea 6, verse 6, he didn't say it that way, but if you understood this verse, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned these men who are without guilt. And he gives a couple Old Testament examples, David eating the bread that was in the tabernacle because his men were starving. And then he also talks about how the priests, the priests in the tabernacle or temple on the Sabbath day work. They have jobs to do. They work on the Sabbath. But that's always been excused because there's a greater purpose. And Jesus says that shows you that in conditions like this, it's okay. So I think one of the things we see here, and we're just sort of using these passages to pick up little bits of what mercy is, I think what we see here is the opposite of what mercy is. Sometimes learning what the opposite of something is can help us understand. The opposite of mercy is condemnation. And the Pharisees were really good at that. They were good at condemning people. But that's the opposite of showing mercy. And so that may help us understand what this word is all about. Next passage is in chapter 18. If you turn over to Matthew 18, it's one of Jesus' great parables that you're most likely pretty familiar with. Matthew 18, beginning verse 21 and following. But the parable is prompted by a question that's asked by one of the disciples. The question is something like, how many times do I have to forgive this jerk friend of mine? How many times do I have to forgive this friend who has sinned against me? And so that's why Jesus tells this well-known parable beginning in verse 23. He says this, "Therefore the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents, an astronomical amount, could never be repaid back, huge amount of money. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you everything.' And out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. But when that servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. Translating that, it's maybe 3 months worth of work wages, approximately, compared to an astronomical amount that could never be paid. One of his fellow servants owed him a few months. Not a small sum to most people, but nothing like was originally forgiven. This guy owed him 100 denarii, and seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, 'Pay what you owe.' So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, 'Have patience with me, and I will pay you.' He refused and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt. When his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went out and reported to their master all that had taken place. Then his master summoned him and said to him, 'You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. And should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?'" It's not until the last line there that we get our word that we're searching tonight. Should you not have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you. Well, another part of this that we discover from Jesus' story here is that mercy is, in a sense, forgiveness. It may be forgiveness of something that's owed, like a debt, forgiveness of a wrong that's been committed, but it's forgiveness of something a lot of times, mercy. But we also see that mercy is something that, and this will come out more a little bit, it's something we like to receive and we enjoy, but that also we often fail to give to another person. We like to get it, but sometimes we don't always give it. And that's part of the point of Jesus' story here. Now, if you go just a few chapters further in Matthew, chapter 23, Jesus is preaching here a lesson really strongly against the religious leaders, these same guys, Pharisees, scribes, and so forth. And the feature of this lesson is this series of woes that he pronounces, seven woes against the scribes and the Pharisees. And one of those woes is Matthew 23:23, where Jesus says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint and dill and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness." What's his criticism of them? They have neglected mercy, among other things. So I think one of the things we learned here is whatever mercy is, it's one of the most important parts of God's law. It is one of the weightiest matters. It's more important, for example, according to Jesus here, it's more important than what you give or how you give. And things like that. Mercy is a weighty matter to Jesus, an important matter. And apparently, it's something that sort of radiated from Jesus, that the aspect of mercy. He has a great reputation, apparently, for being merciful to people. And the evidence of that is people are constantly asking him for it, shouting out to him for mercy. Anybody remember as a kid, hopefully, wrestling with someone and maybe pinning them, getting them into a compromising position, a headlock, whatever? I may or may not remember doing that to my little sister. But when you get them in that spot they can't get out of, what did you make them say? Uncle, at least where I was from, sometimes mercy. Say mercy or say uncle, same thing. That's not what's going on with Jesus. Jesus isn't getting people into compromising positions that they can't handle. These people somehow know that, and I don't know what it's from, maybe it's word of mouth about Jesus? Was it that they witnessed him with their own eyes being merciful to others? Or maybe it's just something, you looked at him and you saw a merciful person. I think sort of like, think back to the beginning of the year when Charlie shared with us the seminar on peace. And one of the things I got out of that was something that radiated from Jesus. It was part of his nature, peace. And I'm thinking that mercy is just something that you looked at him and you saw it. And so people cry out for it. And again, we can sort of survey through Matthew and see this, that Jesus is a source of mercy. Matthew chapter 9, verse 27. I'll just quickly give you some of these. Jesus passed on from there, and two blind men follow him, crying aloud, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." Matthew 15, verse 22. "And behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying, 'Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon.'" See, the call for mercy. Matthew 17, verses 14 and 15. When they came to the crowd, a man came up to him and said, kneeling before him, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is an epileptic and he suffers terribly. For often he falls into the fire and often into the water." Matthew 20, 29 through 31. As they went out of Jericho, a great crowd followed him. Behold, there were two blind men sitting by the roadside. And when they heard that Jesus was passing by, so here are guys who couldn't even see him, but when they heard it was him, they cried out, "Lord, have mercy on us, Son of David." The crowd rebuked them, telling them to be silent, but they cried out all the more, "Lord, have mercy on us, Son of David." So consistently throughout his walking and talking among us, people cry out to Jesus for this very thing, mercy. Over and over, people see Jesus and they cry for mercy. He is seen as a source of mercy. It flows from him. It radiates from him. So whatever mercy is exactly, it is closely associated with who Jesus is and how he treats people. And I think another thing we see here in these passages is that mercy is very practical. No, it is practical help. So we've seen examples where a person needed mercy because they owed a great debt. Person needs healing. Sometimes mercy appears to be something like medicine. Practical stuff. This, not abstract. This isn't some big theological concept. It is meeting real needs that present themselves. That's what mercy is about. And it's clear that mercy is an action. It is not an emotion. Maybe that's a source of confusion sometimes as we think about this. Mercy is not just something like pity. Mercy is doing something about what you see, a need that you see. It's seeing a person in need and meeting that need, if at all possible. It's not just saying, "I really feel bad for them. That's a terrible situation to be in. That must be tough." That's not mercy. Mercy is an action. So we often talk about love as an action. Mercy is an action. I want to quote a passage and ask you to tell me where it is, at least the book it's in. Okay? And I'll give you a hint, half the Bible. It's in the New Testament. You tell me where. "If a brother or sister is poorly clothed and lacking in daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, be warmed and filled,' without giving them the things needed for the body, what good is that?" Anybody know where that is? Just give me the book. You don't have to give me the chapter and verse. It's in James, isn't it? Okay. In a really important passage in James, chapter 2, that's verses 15 and 16 that we just quoted. But it's right after, obviously, verse 14. But James 2:14 says, "What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can his faith save him?" You know that verse. But right after that, the practical example is, you've got a brother that don't have enough clothing or food, and you just say, "That's a bad situation. I feel bad for you. Go in peace, be warmed and filled." And you don't provide them what they need. To James, that's an example of having not real faith. And can that really save? So we see this idea throughout our New Testament, throughout our Bible, but throughout our New Testament, as we're emphasizing tonight. And one other really important point, I think, hopefully we sort of sensed it already, even if we haven't clearly stated it, that is that mercy is reciprocal. This is the nature of mercy, and we get that from our beatitude. Matthew chapter 5, verse 7, blessed are the merciful. Why? What's it go on and say? They shall receive mercy. Blessed are those who show mercy, for they shall receive mercy. It's reciprocal. We could state it the other way, and it'd be just as true. Those who get mercy, give mercy. And we could say it negatively. Those who don't give mercy, what? Don't get it. Those who don't give it, don't get it. Mercy is reciprocal. It goes both ways. And it either goes both ways or it goes no ways. Said of God in the Psalms, with the merciful, you show yourself merciful. Psalm 18:25. What's another way of saying that? You show mercy, God, to those who are merciful. It's almost the same thing as the beatitude. And then in Proverbs 21, verse 13, whoever closes his ear to the cry of the poor will himself call out and not be answered. Whoever shuts their ear to people crying out for mercy will cry out someday and no one will listen. It's reciprocal. That's, I think, what Jesus is expressing in this fifth beatitude. The merciful get mercy. So, here's a basic truth. God tends to treat us the way we treat others. Are you okay with that principle? God tends to treat us the way we treat others. And, for example, remember Jesus tells a story trying to describe what the judgment's going to be like. The great judgment scene, Matthew chapter 25. He describes the king in charge of the judgment, and he's in the process of condemning the one group to eternal destruction. Eternal fire, the text says. And it's basically people who have not shown mercy. They cry out for an explanation. Why? What are you talking about? Why are you condemning us? And the king says in verse 45, truly I say to you, as you did not do it. Now, stop there. Do what? It's show mercy. Feed the hungry, clothe the naked, visit the sick, visit those in prison are examples that he gives. But he says, I say to you, as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And then it says, and these, the unmerciful, will go away into eternal punishment. Now, why? Why send people to eternal fire? Well, part of the answer is because the unmerciful get no mercy before God. The ones who do not show mercy are unlike Jesus, who radiated it. So they're not going to get to spend time with Jesus. Their eternity will not include Jesus. In fact, as you read the story, they're going to spend time with unmerciful beings, the devil and his angels. So it reminds us how weighty, how important mercy is. It is a judgment issue. It is a salvation issue. No one, and I would put an exclamation point after that, no one goes to heaven without receiving the mercy of the king. And no one who refuses to show mercy gets mercy. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. The passage a little later in the New Testament, part of it says, once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 10. Peter writing to Christians. Now, by definition, God's people are people who have been recipients of the mercy of God. And by definition, people who follow Jesus, who are like Jesus, ooze forth mercy. They radiate mercy. They show mercy freely. So with that, let me stop for a minute and ask you. Thoughts on mercy? Something you learned about mercy or something you want to teach me about mercy tonight that we didn't talk about?
Mike? Hosea's daughter, when his daughter is born to Gomer, he will name her Lo Ruhamah, which is literally not mercy. We not translated not love, but I don't have mercy on you because you don't have compassion. You have no compassion. I'm not going to be compassionate to you. And then that plays itself through the whole book. I didn't realize how much I played it through.
Several places.
Yeah. And then later, of course, her name gets changed to Ruhamah, which is mercy. Have mercy then. I'm going to show you mercy, even though you don't deserve it. I'm going to show you mercy.
Hosea's daughter named Mercy.
And remember, his whole family is a parable about Israel. So he was saying Israel doesn't show mercy. It's really the point. And it's an acted out sort of parable there. And good point. Did I see another hand back there?
Yeah, you mentioned there James 2:14 and following. Mm-hmm. It's sort of interesting to me that 1 John 3:17 drives that very thought even harder.
Which is?
I can't quote it right off the top of my head, but it says, but whoso has this world's goods, it sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him?
Absolutely. Yeah. And well, we could make quite a list of passages that make the point in the New Testament, couldn't we? Might not always use this term, mercy, but the point is there throughout. Others? Anybody have a good example of when they've been shown mercy other than when God saved you, obviously? Nobody here has received any mercy. Do we define mercy? What is mercy? Let's do that. Give me a good definition from what we've talked about or what you know about it.
Doing good to others that may or may not deserve it.
Doing good to others that may or may not deserve it. Like the guy who had the gigantic debt and it was totally forgiven. He didn't do anything to earn that. Grace would also be a term we might use in there as well to describe that. Charlie?
I don't know if anything in the Bible supports this or not. So I'll make my statement. You can tell me whether it's got a biblical base or even if it's true. But it seems to me that mercy is about whether the person who shows the mercy has an ego that keeps them from showing it or a selfishness that helps them show mercy. If the world is about us, we don't show mercy to those around us. If the world is about others, not ourselves, I believe unselfish people
I was always taught not to spit in public, but I think that's absolutely right. It's an you have to be outside of yourself to show it, and isn't that the problem with the Pharisees and scribes? Why are they so unmerciful? They're so wrapped up in their view, what they think is right, and criticizing others who are messing up, I guess.
What about the mercy that's shown us when we're baptized that our sins are forgiven?
Greatest example of it.
All the mercy that's displayed in the Bible, I said, that's our place.
And a really important thing to admit
and recognize, too, because if we think we've earned our salvation, then we're not going to be merciful because we don't understand what God has done for us. And that's probably part of the problem with the Pharisees and scribes that Jesus deals with. They think they've got this set of things that they're doing. They think that earns me the approval of God. And they don't understand their sin. You know, why does Jesus eat with sinners? And he says, I didn't come to call the righteous, I would say the self-righteous, but sinners. Yep. Excellent example of mercy.
We sort of have to put ourselves in the position of understanding of the need of the other to show mercy. Otherwise, we just glide over and don't even notice it.
And that's sort of the point of the other one we read, the judgment scene, where these people are, Jesus originally says to them, you didn't come and see me when I was in prison or sick, and you didn't feed me or water, give me water. And they said, when did we ever see you in this situation? Well, it was all these people that were in it, and when you didn't serve them, you didn't serve me. It's a good point. I just see some of you around the edge of saying something. Just spit it out. Right, Charlie? Spit it out. Maybe not.
Her son got killed, and then she lived in an apartment or something, and next thing you know, the guy that killed her son is living right next door to her, and then they end up becoming good friends and say, you know, how hard would it be to show mercy to him? She found a way to do it.
Very difficult. No one said it's easy.
I'm going to take a shot at another one.
Okay. Well, you did something with the first one.
Is likely to be merciful and not have other virtues that match it. It's a pattern, it's not a single action. Loving people, honest people, virtuous people, a virtuous life includes mercy. It's not a single act of mercy or a single characteristic of showing mercy that stands by itself. It takes that one too.
I agree. I mean, it's like, how could you be a merciful person?
Not a forgiving, or gracious, or generous, or even a peaceful person. I know that. So why I bring it up, to butter you up a little bit. But, absolutely. It's sort of like the fruit of the Spirit, you know. We've got a list of fruit of the Spirit, but we don't get to pick. I'm good at this one. It's the whole thing that God tries to grow in us, and they all go together. Bill?
If we don't show mercy, or have mercy, we will never, ever become like Jesus.
No.
It never happens. We're depriving ourselves of one of the great blessings.
I think it's one of the things from my study of this that has helped me. I think it's really true. Somehow Jesus, when you saw him or were around him, you knew that he had an abundance of this. And we're supposed to be like him. So we're not going to ever be as merciful, as good at it, but a mature Christian, people ought to be able to look at a mature Christian and say, I can cry out for mercy to that person. And if that's not the case, wow, we're in trouble. But it's something we grow in, I guess, like everything else. Yes?
You mentioned fruit of the Spirit a moment ago. Mm-hmm. Fruit of the Spirit, and we go through the list. Mercy is one of them. Yeah. When you look at Paul's discussion in Galatians, though, it does talk about brotherly kindness.
Yes. Think so, and you think about the list of the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness. Mercy could be in there. Those are all elements.
Yeah. That's why I say the word wasn't there, but the concept.
Right, and it again sort of goes back to someone's comment about the thing as a whole, the whole package. All right, anybody else? Did you get all your blanks filled in if you were wanting to fill in your blanks? Any questions on those? We'll collect those and grade them and turn them back sometime. Well, I enjoyed sharing it with you and especially your sharing back with me. Before we finish tonight, we will offer an invitation if you're here and maybe you're crying out for mercy from God, need the prayers of the church, or to be served in some way. Maybe tonight you're ready to put the Lord on in baptism or to be recommitted to Him. We give you a few moments here to think about that, and we can help you with that in some way. We want to, and so we're going to stand just in a moment and sing. What number do you have, Zach?
971.
As our song of invitation, if you need help tonight, we offer it to you while we stand.